Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
You're watching Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Now, you may have noticed that tonight's show looks slightly different. That's because Sharad and I will continue to broadcast the show as we work from home. And tonight, we will be speaking to the co-editors of the recently launched book titled Sabah from the Ground, the 2020 Elections and the Politics of Survival. Now, this book is a study on Sabah's elections last year, what happened and why, as well as the broader implications of the outcome for Sabah and Malaysian politics. Now, the first co-editor that's going to join us on the show tonight is Bridget Welsh, who also authored several chapters in the book. Bridget, good evening. Thank you for being on the show with us. In the introduction of this book, it's noted that the explanations of Sabah politics often focus on ethnic and state nationalism. So I'm wondering why you think that is a limiting approach. Help us understand why this approach is not the only approach or the only lens from which to view Sabah politics.
There's two parts of it, right? So people, the focus on ethnic politics ignores other aspects of people's identity, issues of class, issues of generational cohort, where people live within parts of an area, such as regionalism. And so therefore, the ethnic focus really just ignores other aspects of people's living in terms of the context of why they may vote for different candidates or not. And at the other aspect of this, the focus on state nationalism really looks at the focus in the debate at the elite level for most Sabahans. The idea is the relationship between the federal government and the state and Sabah. But the fact of the matter is, for most ordinary people, they're focused on the issues of managing their ordinary lives, for their family, for the economy. They're not necessarily thinking about the federal government. So I think these particular approaches, while are important, they should not be exclusive to understanding what's happening in Sabah.
You can help us address that issue about, and I think it's brought up in, in part in the book itself, about the dearth of research and writing on Sabah. You mentioned some works of note, like Herman Luping's book that remains banned, I understand. Why has Sabah not attracted, more research and more analysis, considering the very curious complexities that differ from the national narrative?
I think in some ways it's the complexities themselves that often become an obstacle for people to try to understand, which in fact it should be exactly as you suggested, the opposite, that people should begin to learn and to explore Sabah. And I think there are good scholarship on Sabah, but it's not necessarily focused on political behavior and understanding politics. And I think that what the whole book aims to do is to kind of continue and expand the discussion and the analysis of these issues and to build a stronger foundation for these conversations.
Right. Bridget, could you come back to that, your earlier answer about not just looking at Sabah through the lens of, an ethnic focus and state nationalism? How should we be then looking at Sabah? How should we be understanding in a more holistic manner?
I think there are a few very important things that come out of the book and these conversations by a whole series of authors. The first of which is that Sabah has a very different social, ethnic, and composition. So it's not just the ethnic communities, but also the conditions that they're living in. You have almost one out of five households are poor, and these are really very big, serious challenges for Sabah. And this, I think, is important for understanding why there is poverty, what are the dynamics behind it. Part of that population, large sections of Sabah, more than half of it are rural, and I think these issues need to be looked at. The other dimensions of this is that Sabah has particular issues to Sabah, which of course have to do with the issues of undocumented persons or what people call PTI or PATI or illegal communities, but they're actually many of them most of them are undocumented. And this set of issues has been highly politicized over time, and it's not and it's much more potent and it's much more serious in Sabah than anywhere else in the country. So as a consequence, this issue shapes the state's politics in very different sets of ways. And I think the third issue has to do with Sabah, has to do with the issues of governance, in the sense that there is serious obstacles in terms of access to healthcare, even access to education for some of the people in the very rural areas, access to other basic services. And those issues affect the way people engage the political system, because they think about voting in terms of being able to access services or to improve their livelihoods, where in other parts of Malaysia, many of these services are provided, so they make different sets of choices.
Bridget, this is an exceptionally large book. I mean, since it, in terms of its ambitions, it's over 350 pages long and covers everything from youth politics to the question of unemployment. But I was intrigued by the two forwards provided in the book, one by Bernard Dompo and Saleh Said Krua, both of those well-known names when we think of Saban politics. What I thought was quite interesting in both the forwards is a sense that Sabahans, at least these two individuals, believe that there's something for the rest of the country to learn from Sabah. It's not simply that we're looking at Sabah as it were, a marginal space in the country for which, you know, things have, there are a lot of deprivations and you note the politics of resentment, but also that there's something positive to learn from Sabah. Could you help us understand what that might be?
Oh, I think it's very important to learn from Sabah, because there's a much more civil discourse among people, even within the political competition, and it is heated. But the fact is that there isn't the same level of acrimony and the same level of polarization that is mobilized to the same degree as it is in the rest of Malaysia. And even ethnic politics is actually, while significantly important, it's not as divisive in terms of the way that it is actually practiced in terms of and politicized in terms of the way it on the ground. And so I think these are some of the issues that people talk about, the way that politics is carried out, the way the types of issues and discourse on the ground, and the fact that there is also, I think, more recognition and discussions of some of the challenges. And I think that the issues in terms of governance and others are very pertinent. Now, while many of the politicians didn't necessarily focus on them, I think many of the individuals, in terms of their interests and how they voted, these were very much on their radar.
Right. And you looked at voting patterns during the last elections. Bridget, what can you tell us about what you've learned looking at voting behavior from the 2020 Sabah elections?
So there are three things I would emphasize. The first is that that while ethnicity is important in Sabah, it is not the only factor that is actually shaping voting behavior. And what we saw in particular, that class voting was important. Those have lower incomes were switched their support compared to 2018 in 2020. And that is something that actually helped GRS to win in the election. Also, along with that, was the importance of gender as a factor of that underscores voting patterns over time. And I so in the need to look at these other factors beyond the issues of just looking at ethnicity is an important dimension. The second big finding is that the voter electorate in Sabah is still polarized, like the way it is in the rest of Malaysia. And I think that many of the people who voted for Pakatan Harapan Party, and particularly in the case of Sabah Warisan, they still stayed loyal to Warisan. And I think that this was also the case for parties that had previously voted for PN and also in this time for BNP. GRS. So what we see is a situation where there's still quite divisions within the electorate, and there were people who were loyal to those particular patterns. And the third issue that we see in the voting patterns is that we see a situation where there is now a new group of people coming in, younger voters. And what happened in Sabah is that many of them still are not registered, and only around half of them came out, but they are very important, and they're going to drive Sabah politics as they are going to drive the nation's politics. And I think this is where the issues of youth become crucial, and this is one of the reasons why we have at least two chapters on youth in this book.
Okay. Bridget, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. Unfortunately, we're about to go to break, but we want to thank you so much for being on the show and highlighting some of the insights that you shared in the book. Congratulations on the book once again. We're going to take a quick break here on Consider This, and we will be back with more, so stay tuned.